In 1960, an extraordinary literary phenomenon emerged from the unlikeliest of places, Sao Paulo's Caninde Favela. Carolina Maria de Jesus, a Black single mother who collected paper and scrap metal to feed her three children, published Cuarto de Despejo, Child of the Dark, a raw, unfiltered diary documenting her daily struggles with hunger, violence, and indignity. The book became an overnight sensation, selling over 100,000 copies in Brazil alone and eventually being translated into 13 languages. Carolina's unflinching account of favela life captivated readers worldwide with its unique, semi-educated, yet powerfully creative language. Celebrities and intellectuals praised her work, with renowned poet Manuel Bandeira defending its authenticity against skeptics. Though Carolina briefly escaped poverty through her literary success, her story remains tragically relevant decades later, as Brazil's favelas has only multiplied, housing millions in conditions not vastly different from what she described in her revolutionary diary. Hunger is the relentless antagonist in Carolina's world, a monster that stalks her every waking moment. "The worst thing in the world is hunger," she declares, a refrain that echoes throughout her diary. Each day begins with the same anxiety: will there be enough to eat? On July 16, 1955, she writes about having only beans and salt for her children, forcing them to take plain coffee and eat meat with flour. The constant preoccupation with food shapes her every decision and movement through the city. Carolina's descriptions of hunger are visceral and haunting. She details how it makes her dizzy. Hunger dizziness is worse than alcohol's. Alcohol dizziness makes us sing, but hunger makes us tremble. When she finally finds food after a day of collecting paper, she describes the transformative effect. "What a surprising effect food has on our body. Before eating, I saw the sky, trees, birds, everything yellow. After eating, everything normalized to my eyes." This isn't poetic exaggeration, but lived experience. The indignity of scavenging becomes routine. Carolina regularly collects discarded food from garbage cans, admitting, "When I find something in the garbage that I can eat, I eat it." She describes separating sausages thrown away at the slaughterhouse, selecting the ones that weren't spoiled, and later confesses, "I don't want to grow weak, and I can't buy food. And I have a lion's appetite, so I resort to the garbage." When merchants pour creolin, a disinfectant, over discarded meat to prevent the poor from eating it, Carolina sees it as deliberate cruelty. Her children's hunger pains her most deeply. She calls their pleas for food "my children's symphony." "Mommy, I want bread. Mommy, I'm hungry." On her daughter Vera Eunice's birthday, Carolina can only offer congratulations instead of cake. When Vera sees the polenta instead of birthday cake, she ate crying. These moments reveal the emotional toll of poverty. The inability to provide even small joys for her children cuts deeper than her own physical hunger. Carolina's diary captures the psychological impact of chronic hunger, how it dominates the mind and warps perception. "When you're hungry, you don't sleep," she notes. She even contemplates suicide with her children before looking at them and feeling sorry because they're full of life. Whoever lives needs to eat. In her most desperate moments, she admits to eyeing a cat and thinking, "If this one were in a pot stewed with onions and tomatoes, I swear I'd eat it, because hunger is the worst thing in the world." Carolina's most enduring metaphor for the favela is the garbage room of a city, where society discards what it no longer values. "We, the poor, are the old furniture," she writes, capturing the dehumanization of favela residents. This metaphor wasn't merely poetic. It reflected the physical reality of the Caninde Favela, built on the muddy banks of the Tietê River, surrounded by trash and excrement. The physical environment is a constant assault on dignity. Carolina describes waking before dawn to fetch water from the communal tap, where long lines form and women gossip viciously. "What a horrible thing it is to wait at the tap," she laments. Her shack, constructed of discarded materials, offers little protection from the elements. During rainstorms, she stays up all night fixing leaks. "I'd fix one side, it would drip from another." The mud is inescapable. How horrible it is to step in mud, she writes, a simple statement that captures the daily indignity of navigating the favela's unpaved pathways. The sensory experience of the favela assaults residents constantly. Carolina contrasts it with the idealized garden. The only perfume that exhales in the favela is rotten mud, excrement, and cheap liquor. She describes the constant presence of insects and vermin, fleas that prevent sleep, rats that damage her precious books, and mosquitoes she kills by burning newspaper along the walls of her shack. Beyond the physical hardships, the social environment is equally toxic. Violence erupts regularly, often fueled by alcohol. Carolina documents fights between couples that spill into public spectacle. When fights begin, favela dwellers leave their tasks to watch. These conflicts frequently involve women running naked into the street to escape beatings, providing a real spectacle for the common folk. Children witness everything, absorbing the obscenity and violence. Carolina worries about the impact on her own children, noting that, in favelas, 15-year-old girls stay out as late as they want, mixing with prostitutes. The favela's proximity to the city highlights the stark inequality. Carolina observes that Sao Paulo appears as a paradise to visitors who don't see its ulcers, the favelas. She classifies the city with bitter precision. The palace is the living room, the city hall is the dining room, the city is the garden, and the favela is the backyard where they throw the garbage. When she visits middle-class homes, the contrast overwhelms her. At Dona Julita's house, she's dizzy after eating a proper meal, noting, "Dona Julita's food makes me dizzy, her body unaccustomed to adequate nutrition." Despite the harshness of favela life, Carolina maintains a fierce dignity. She refuses to beg and takes pride in supporting her children through her own labor. "My children aren't sustained by church bread. I face any kind of work to support them." This determination to maintain independence sets her apart from neighbors who rely on charity and fuels her dream of eventually escaping the favela. At the heart of Carolina's diary is her identity as a mother striving to shield her three children, Joel Jose, Jose Carlos, and Vera Eunice, from their challenging environment. Her parental dedication transforms her daily struggles into a purposeful mission. Carolina maintains careful boundaries for her children's well-being. She guides her oldest son, Joao, to be selective with his associations, believing this necessary for his development. When learning about conditions in youth rehabilitation centers from former residents, she resolves to find alternative approaches to addressing behavioral challenges, understanding that institutional environments can be detrimental to child development. Her primary concern is preserving her children's innocence amid difficult circumstances. She observes how their environment forces young people to encounter adult realities prematurely. When her son reports concerning behavior among neighborhood children, she redirects the conversation to more age-appropriate topics. She notes with concern that their environment often deprives children of natural developmental stages. Despite financial constraints, Carolina prioritizes education, ensuring her sons attend school even when lacking proper attire. She takes pride in their literacy and encourages their aspirations. When Jose Carlos expresses professional ambitions, she supports his vision of future success. She consistently emphasizes education as their pathway to advancement. The intersection of childhood innocence and environmental challenges creates ongoing tension. When Vera receives a cherished toy, her response reveals both childlike wonder and premature awareness of life's difficulties. During Carolina's illness, her children's protective behavior demonstrates both their love and their awareness of potential consequences. Providing nourishment becomes a tangible expression of Carolina's devotion. She prioritizes proper meals when unable to provide better housing. Vera's joy at special meals brings Carolina particular satisfaction. These moments of providing for her children offer her meaningful rest after hard work. Carolina's quest to improve their living situation is fundamentally motivated by her children's future. She maintains focus on this goal, declining personal relationships that might interfere with her mission. When her writing gains attention, she views it as a potential means of securing better circumstances for her family. This unwavering dedication sustains her through numerous challenges, elevating her daily work from basic survival to a dignified purpose. Carolina's Diary provides a scathing critique of Brazilian politics from the perspective of the truly marginalized. Though she has limited formal education, her observations cut through political rhetoric to expose the fundamental disconnect between politicians' promises and the reality of favela life. Her most biting criticism targets politicians' cyclical interest in the poor. Politicians only appear here in the garbage dump during election times, she observes. She recounts how Councilman Cantídio Sampaio visited the favela every Sunday during his campaign in 1953. He was pleasant, drank from our cups, spoke softly, played with our children. After winning election as deputy, he never created a project to benefit the favela dwellers. He never visited us again. This pattern repeats with each election cycle, as candidates distribute food, blankets, and promises, only to disappear after securing votes. Carolina's hunger directly shapes her political views. Hardship cuts people's affection for politicians, she notes bluntly. During a particularly desperate period, she writes, when I'm hungry, I want to kill Jânio, hang Agimar, and burn Juscelino, referring to major political figures of the era. She understands that her perspective comes from lived experience. Brazil needs to be led by someone who has experienced hunger. Hunger is also a teacher. Those who have been hungry learn to think of others, especially children. The economic policies of President Juscelino Kubitschek receive particular scorn. Carolina compares his administration to a dog when it wants to catch its tail with its mouth and keep spinning without catching it. She mocks the devaluation of currency under his leadership with a bitter verse. I'm disgusted, I'm terrified, of aluminum money, money without value, Juscelino's money. When Jesus told the women of Jerusalem to cry for yourselves, Carolina sees it as prophecy for Mr. Juscelino's government, a time of hardship for the Brazilian people, a time when the poor must eat what they find in the trash or sleep hungry. Carolina's political observations extend beyond criticism to analysis of systemic issues. She notes how merchants hoard food to drive up prices. Instead of selling cheaply, they keep waiting for price increases. When floods damage warehouse inventories, she celebrates, serves them right. She recognizes that the increasing cost of living threatens the political system itself, observing that the cost of living makes workers lose sympathy for democracy, and predicting, if the cost of living continues to rise until 1960, we're going to have a revolution. Despite her criticisms, Carolina maintains faith in democratic processes. She proudly votes and values her voter registration, noting her registration number is 845.936. When transportation fares increase after an election, she suggests a direct form of accountability. They should go to the Ibirapuera Palace and the Assembly and give a beating to these fancy politicians who don't know how to administer the country. Her political consciousness combines pragmatic understanding of power with moral clarity about justice. Carolina's perspective on politics is ultimately shaped by her daily reality of hunger and struggle. She dismisses ideological debates in favor of practical concerns. I don't have physical strength, but my words wound more than a sword, and the wounds are incurable. Her diary stands as powerful testimony that the true measure of political success is not rhetoric, but whether people can feed their children. Carolina's Diary reveals the complex social ecosystem of the favela, where extreme poverty creates both solidarity and conflict. As an educated Black woman raising children alone, Carolina occupies a unique position, both part of the community and deliberately separate from it, an observer who records its rhythms and contradictions. Alcohol permeates favela life, serving as both escape and catalyst for violence. Carolina notes, they drink because they're happy, and they drink because they're sad. Drink here is the palliative, in tragic times and in joyful ones. She observes how parents introduce children to alcohol early, claiming they have worms, and how drinking disrupts family stability. She proudly abstains, explaining, I'm alone with three children. If I became addicted to alcohol, my children wouldn't respect me. Violence erupts regularly, often fueled by alcohol and jealousy. Carolina documents numerous fights between couples that become public spectacles. When fights begin, favela dwellers leave their tasks to watch. These conflicts frequently involve women running naked into the street to escape beatings, providing a real spectacle for the common folk. Carolina intervenes in fights when she foresees potential crimes, calling the police patrol despite the cost. If I saved all the money I've spent calling the radio patrol, I could buy a kilo of meat. Gender dynamics in the favela reflect broader patriarchal structures intensified by poverty. Carolina observes that married women lead lives like Indian slaves, while men often abandon their responsibilities. She chooses independence, stating, "I never married and I'm not unhappy." This choice subjects her to gossip and harassment, with neighbors claiming she speaks very well and knows how to attract men. When a man propositions her crudely in writing, she simply returns the paper without responding, maintaining her dignity. The communal water tap serves as the favela's information hub and conflict zone. Carolina dreads fetching water because either fights break out or someone wants to know others' business. Women spread vicious rumors, their tongues like chicken feet spreading rumors everywhere. Carolina compares them unfavorably to men. In favelas, men are more tolerant and delicate. The troublemakers are women, with intrigues like Carlos Lacerda that irritate nerves. Despite the hardships, moments of community joy emerge. Carolina describes a foot race organized by the local soccer team, with prizes for winners and rotten eggs and a candle for last place. The event brings residents together in celebration, with mulled wine for adults and sweet potatoes for children. Religious services also unite the community, with believers gathering 3 times weekly to praise God, despite harassment from favela vagabonds who throw stones at their meeting place. Carolina maintains a complex relationship with her neighbors, helping when possible, but keeping emotional distance. She gives garlic to neighbors who ask and offers coffee to visitors, but refuses to join in gossip or public spectacles. Her writing creates tension, as she tells uncultured women that, "I'm writing a book about everything that happens here." This documentation role further separates her from neighbors who fear exposure of their behavior. Throughout her diary, Carolina balances empathy for fellow favela residents with determination to maintain different standards for herself and her children. She understands that environment shapes behavior. They're diamonds transformed into lead, objects that were in the living room and went to the garbage room, while refusing to let the favela define her identity or her children's futures. Carolina's identity as a writer forms the core of her self-concept, providing dignity and purpose amid grinding poverty. Her diary reveals not just the harsh conditions of favela life, but also the inner world of an artist struggling to create despite overwhelming obstacles. Writing serves as Carolina's emotional outlet and survival mechanism. "When I had nothing to eat, instead of cursing, I wrote," she explains. The act of writing transforms her anger and despair into something productive. "I'm not slovenly. If I'm dirty, it's because of the upheaval in a favela dweller's life." She carries notebooks everywhere, writing in stolen moments between collecting paper and caring for her children. Often, she writes at night after her children are asleep or before dawn when the favela is quietest. Books represent Carolina's connection to a world beyond the favela. "I can't sleep without reading. Books are mankind's greatest invention," she declares. Her love of literature comes from her teacher, Dona Lenita Salvina, who encouraged her to read, write, and use the dictionary. She proudly distinguishes herself from neighbors, noting, "I prefer to spend my money on books rather than alcohol, and I collect paper, iron, and in my spare time, I write." When a neighbor comments, "I've never seen a Black woman who loves books as much as you," Carolina embraces this as her defining characteristic. Everyone has an ideal. Mine is reading. Her writing ambitions extend beyond personal expression to professional recognition. She mentions having written plays for circuses, recalling directors who told her, "It's a pity you're Black." She sends manuscripts to publishers and even to the United States, hoping for publication. When a journalist discovers her diary and recognizes its value, Carolina's hope surges. The eventual publication of excerpts in newspapers validates her identity as a writer after years of rejection. Carolina's unique literary voice emerges from her limited formal education combined with natural talent and voracious reading. She composes verses spontaneously. When I sing, I compose verses. I sing until I tire of the song. Her observations are often poetic despite their brutal subject matter, as when she describes the purple flowers, the color of bitterness that is in the hearts of hungry Brazilians. This distinctive style, what poet Manuel Bandeira called her semi-educated yet powerfully creative language, gives her writing its authentic power. Writing also provides psychological escape from her surroundings. The hours when I'm happy are when I'm living in imaginary castles, she confesses. In one poignant passage, she describes how writing transports her. While I write, I keep thinking that I live in a golden castle that gleams in the sunlight, that the windows are silver and the lights are brilliant, that my view circles the garden and I contemplate flowers of all kinds. It's necessary to create this fantasy environment to forget that I'm in the favela. Most significantly, Carolina sees her writing as documentation of injustice, a testimony that might eventually lead to change. I'm proving how I live, she declares when criticized. She understands that her perspective has unique value. No reporter could better capture the authentic perspective from inside a favela. This sense of purpose sustains her through countless hardships and rejections, transforming her daily struggle from mere survival into a mission with meaning. Despite the crushing weight of poverty, Carolina's diary pulses with persistent hope. Her dreams for a decent house, education for her children, recognition of her writing provide the emotional fuel that powers her through each grueling day of paper collection and hunger. Carolina's most consistent dream is escaping the favela. Oh, if only I could move somewhere more decent, she laments repeatedly. This hope becomes almost spiritual. I live in the favela, but hope to leave if God helps me. She imagines the day of departure as a celebration. Even I, the day I move, will burn incense to thank God. I'll do a mental fast, thinking only of good things that please God. This dream sustains her through countless indignities and hardships. Material comforts represent dignity in Carolina's imagination. She dreams of owning a meat grinder and sewing machine and saves for these practical items that would improve daily life. When suitors promise gifts like a sewing machine or radio, she's momentarily tempted despite her general wariness of relationships. These modest aspirations reveal how basic comforts remain out of reach for favela residents. Carolina's dreams often appear in literal form while sleeping. She describes, "A wonderful dream. I dreamed I was an angel. My dress was ample with long pink sleeves. I went from earth to heaven and held stars in my hand." Upon waking, she reflects, "I am so poor. I can't go to a show, so God sends me these dazzling dreams for my pained soul." Another night, she dreams of living in a decent house with a bathroom, kitchen, dining room, and even a maid's room with abundant food, only to wake to bitter reality. "I didn't live in the city. I was in the favela, in the mud, on the banks of the Tietê, with only 9 cruzeiros. Education represents hope for the next generation. Carolina takes pride when her son Jose Carlos declares he's going to be a distinguished man who lives in a brick house. She advises her older son Joel to complete primary school and continue studying, recognizing education as their path out of poverty. When Vera receives a doll as a gift, the child's joy and gratitude, promising to pray every day for the woman's happiness, reveals how small kindnesses nurture hope. Writing represents Carolina's personal dream of recognition and escape. She persists despite repeated rejections, sending manuscripts to publishers and even to the United States. When journalist Audalio Dantes discovers her diary and recognizes its value, her hope surges. The eventual publication of excerpts in newspapers validates her identity as a writer after years of rejection. Reading the first published article about her diary, she describes, "Her heart oscillated like clock springs with anticipation." Throughout the diary, Carolina balances clear-eyed assessment of her circumstances with refusal to surrender to despair. "I'm not resentful. I'm so accustomed to human wickedness," she writes after neighbors burn her paper sacks. Even in her darkest moments, contemplating suicide, she concludes, "I don't have the courage to commit suicide, and I cannot die of hunger." This resilience comes not from naive optimism, but from practical determination. I've already overcome so many things alone. I'll overcome this. Throughout her diary, Carolina maintains a fierce sense of personal dignity despite living in what she calls the garbage room of Sao Paulo. This dignity isn't based on material possessions or social status, but on her internal values, moral clarity, and refusal to be defined by her circumstances. Carolina takes pride in her independence and self-reliance. Unlike neighbors who depend on charity, she supports her family through her own labor. "My children aren't sustained by church bread. I face any kind of work to support them." When a woman commits suicide because she couldn't feed her children, Carolina reflects, "Poor woman, she didn't have the soul of a favela dweller who scavenges through garbage, collects vegetables at markets, and begs to survive." This capacity to endure becomes a source of pride. Her racial identity forms a core aspect of her dignity. "I adore my black skin and my rustic hair," she declares, when recalling circus directors who told her, "It's a pity you're black." She even finds black people's hair more well-behaved than white people's hair because it stays where you put it obediently. When faced with racial discrimination, she responds with quiet confidence, "If reincarnation exists, I always want to return as black." Carolina's literacy and intellectual life distinguishes her from many neighbors. She reads constantly, declaring, "Books are mankind's greatest invention, and I can't sleep without reading." When a neighbor expresses surprise at her love of reading, saying, "I've never seen a black woman who loves books as much as you," Carolina embraces this as her defining characteristic. "Everyone has an ideal. Mine is reading." Her writing provides both emotional outlet and proof of her worth beyond her economic circumstances. Moral standards form another pillar of Carolina's dignity. She refuses to participate in neighborhood gossip, noting, "I don't like being among the women because at the water tap, they gossip about everyone and everything." She abstains from alcohol despite its prevalence in the favela, explaining, "I'm alone with three children. If I became addicted to alcohol, my children wouldn't respect me." She maintains sexual boundaries as well, rejecting casual relationships and telling a persistent suitor, "I don't need a man." Religion provides Carolina with perspective beyond immediate hardships. She regularly attends Mass and appreciates the priests who serve the favela community. Biblical references pepper her diary, from comparing her struggles to Jesus' prophecies to reflecting on Moses liberating the Jews. These spiritual resources help her maintain hope despite daily indignities. Perhaps most fundamentally, Carolina refuses to internalize society's devaluation of the poor. When a shopkeeper treats her with contempt, she questions, "So the money of favela dwellers has no value?" When politicians ignore favela residents except during elections, she sees through their hypocrisy rather than doubting her own worth. She recognizes systemic injustice rather than personal failure as the root of her poverty. This maintenance of dignity requires constant vigilance against the corrosive effects of extreme poverty. Carolina admits moments of despair. "I'm so tired of writing and sleepy, but here in the favela, one cannot sleep because the shacks are damp," yet continues writing, collecting paper, caring for her children. Her diary itself becomes an act of dignity, transforming the raw material of suffering into testimony that would eventually reach readers worldwide, proving that even from the garbage room, a voice of profound humanity could emerge.